Morning, St. Louis. Welcome, welcome to the Home Improvement Show right here on KMOX, your trusted voice for all things home improvement, remodeling, making your dream home a reality right here today. I'm your host, Rich Orris, here to help you tackle some of your toughest projects, answer any burning questions you may have, and or share some expert tips and keep your home really healthy and running smoothly for you. So whatever you need, whatever you got going on, whatever you're dealing with, maybe it's just a tricky repair, planning a big remodel project, or you just need some advice, I am here for you. We got 2 hours today, so do not wait. Pick up the phone and join the conversation. Like he said, right here, 314-436-7900 is where you are going to find me. So we're live, we're local, and we're ready to dive in. Now let's roll up our sleeves. Let's go to work. What's on your mind? Tell me what's happening today, and we'll help you through it. And kind of to maybe if there's some newer people out there, just to kind of explain what I'm doing, why I do it, why I enjoy this so much and trying to help out. So I work for a company called Mosby Building Arts, and I go around on a daily basis, and I meet with clients up front, and I find out what they're looking to do, what their issues with their home is, what kind of remodeling are they looking to do, and just have some really good conversations, try to just be a really good advisor to everyone and explain about the industry, what's happening, explain a lot about different types of companies, how they work, how they run, what you can expect, not just with the investments in projects and different levels of pricing and how they manage things like that, but what you can expect by what everyone is wondering about and thinking about. And what they complain about when you look up and you go through like the Better Business Bureau and you find out what are the complaints, it's typically how a company is run. It's what do they do and how well do they do it? How well do they communicate? How well do they schedule? How often do they get done on time? The questions I'm often asked from a lot of different people when they're trying to compare levels of service, they're asking things like, well, how long should this bathroom take? Or how long would this take with you guys and your people and your employees and how you manage it and get through it? And because they're trying to kind of compare what's happening out there in the industry with the different types and levels of company and with how things work and run, They're trying to find the value that will work for them. And there's more and more people every day that they want better communication. They want to be done on time. They want to understand what happened, what's going on, and why. And they want to know and get through this so that it's less stressful and they're more in the know, and they have better expectations set for what's happening, what's going to happen, and how things finish out, and why certain things happen. So there's a lot to figuring that out, and there's a lot of different levels of companies out there that do things a lot of different ways, and that's fine. And I've worked for a lot of them years past that were more the general, that didn't have a lot of employees, that didn't have a high level of service when it came to how things were done and when were they done and how did you get through it. And then in the end, it's then all about how happy were you with what happened and would you ever utilize that company again? Because that's another thing I hear way too often when looking at a home for someone and they've done things and they've remodeled things and they've had, and some of these I see projects that look great. I'm looking at a master bathroom and we're sitting in their kitchen talking about it, and the kitchen looks really, really good, like a good quality, nice remodeled job. When did you have your kitchen remodeled? Oh, it was about 5 years ago. Oh, well, are you talking to them about your bathroom? Oh, absolutely not. I'd never let them in my house again. It was a horrible experience. I've literally probably one of the worst I heard was I wouldn't hire those people to come back to my home to pick up the dog poop in my backyard. Is things like that I've heard that, and you're sitting there going, wow, this is they did it. It looks like a nice job. I mean, I haven't really gotten inside the cabinets and stuff, but just eyeballing everything around, everything looks great. And they're like, no, we're happy with this, but we were unhappy with how long it took and that they didn't tell us how long it would take and that we didn't understand that. And there was pieces of the project that the expectations just weren't set well. So we didn't understand that this cabinet door might hit this, or we might have trouble working in the kitchen. If you open the dishwasher, you won't be able to do this in how that layout works. There's projects that happen with expectations that aren't set really well. Then you could end up being done through it and just having some things that you end up having to live with because it wasn't disclosed and it wasn't talked about and it wasn't thought about. And you've had one person looking at the design and the layout, maybe one architect draws the whole thing, and then everybody just comes in to build it, and you don't find out different things until you're pretty deep into it. So that's why I do this. That's why I love what I do. That's why I want to help everybody during the week, and I want to help everybody here for a couple hours on Saturday. I really enjoy it, and I really hope that it is useful and that it will give you some information that can help you in your day-to-day process here, trying to figure out what do you do for your home and how do you maintain it and how do you get through it. So again, remember, you can find me right here today, live, ready for you, 314-436-7900. Let's get into our first break, and while we wait and get through that real quick, let's get the phones lit up and let's get some questions and some answers and some conversations going. Don't go anywhere, more to come. All right, guys, here we go. We are back, and we got a lot of time. We got a lot going on. Again, don't forget, right here is where you find me, 314-436-7900. Anything you need, let's try and help you out around your house. And we've got Gail on the line. Let's see what's going on with Gail. Hey, are you there?
Yes, Rich, I'm here. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's happening?
My old gas boiler died on me this week. It was emitting carbon monoxide. And so I called a contractor, so I'm going to get a new one this Thursday. But I just saw like an image of the boiler that they're going to install, and it sits flat on the concrete basement floor.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering, is it reasonable to ask them to place that on like some type of platform, just because I do have kind of leaky basement at times?
I think they can at least it might depend somewhat on the piping coming in and out of that boiler. But
I think they're going to do new piping because they're going to do a chimney liner and stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so if they can do that because of hooking up some new piping and kind of relocating, which they may be doing because of the different size and of the boiler and that, it wouldn't be hard to ask them if you had something around to set it on like four cinder blocks or something to get it 8 inches off the ground, and the concrete cinder blocks would be good for water and moisture and things running through there. So a 4-inch brick or an 8-inch cinder block is not out of the question to ask them to set it on something like that. It's really a matter of when they re-hook up the pipes, and they may have a reason to have it at a certain level or a certain height so that they're only doing so much work to the boiler lines coming in and out and all that. That might be the biggest question, where it might change a little bit of what they're doing, but I don't think it's definitely not out of the question to ask them about it and tell them about your concern.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I will say to people, have those carbon monoxide detectors in your basement because it saved us.
Yeah, no, that is that. I appreciate that comment, and that is definitely a big thing, a big deal, and worth having. Absolutely. And what I always try and tell everybody too is, even though they tell you to put one on, the code kind of says put one on every level of the home, but I'd also say if you have an attached garage and you come in a door into your home from that garage, I would put one, like an outlet version of one, at the closest outlet inside the house to that garage door, just in case something were to happen with the garage, a car running, anything like that, then you could have it closer to where that might be coming from.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, that's good. I'm happy to hear that carbon monoxide detector worked for you, and hopefully they'll be able to get that boiler off that floor for you.
Yeah, okay. Thanks a lot, Rich. That helped.
Yeah, no problem. You're welcome. Great question and great thought. And, yeah, it's definitely almost always worth having conversations to figure out, okay, what are some of the things? Because then you might also learn why certain things are happening. So someone might come back and you ask them a question, and then they kind of say, okay, well, here's why we're doing what we're doing, and now we have this other concern we're thinking about, so maybe they have to do something, and it adds a little time or a little material or anything like that. But it's definitely worth the conversation, and you can really get educated and understand what's happening and what they're doing for that. So remember, everybody out there, let's keep the calls coming, 314-436-7900, whatever you need. I do want to touch back on something I kind of started last Saturday, and then we ended up with so many good conversations, topics, and phone calls that I kind of went about halfway through it and never really got finished with it. But I was talking about unclogging a bathroom sink. I was last Friday night before last weekend, I did that for my daughter in her bathroom, and had a client that also had the exact same issue that they were talking about. Well, maybe we call in a drain company, this and that. And I was kind of explaining that majority of the time, that clog in a bathroom sink, especially if you have anyone using that has any type of long hair. So if you've ever met me, seen me, you can be pretty sure my hair is like buzzed. There's no clog in my sink in my bathroom. But on the other side of my bathroom, at my wife's sink, probably twice a year with the long blonde hair, my daughter's the exact same way. I just have to get in there and keep this sink flowing. It will just slow down and eventually kind of clog up. And it kind of happens above the P-trap, right at that stopper, as everything's trying to go through. That hair just gets caught up there. So if you're not real inclined to get into a lot of plumbing work, one of the things you can try is they have a device called a hair snake. They're 15, 16, 20 inches long, and you can use that. I use one of those for the bathtub, for like my daughter's bathtub, where she was upstairs. I could take that and kind of go in around that pop-up and just pull a lot of that hair out to get that bathtub working. So you could try that in your bathroom sink also. But if it's not enough, if it's too hard to do because it is tight, it is a tight spot, and you can get a lot in there if you haven't paid attention to it, the best thing to do is to get to that stopper and kind of take that stopper out. So what you need to do is, well, first thing first, kind of remove any items around that sink, under the sink, inside that cabinet, so you really have some room to work. My daughter's bathroom is really, really small. I had to actually take the cabinet door off of the cabinet so that I could have enough room to be kind of between the wall and the cabinet, and that to even be in there to do any work. But what you do is remove that stopper, And to do that, you can go under that sink on the back of the pipe. There's a nut you can unscrew. That's a nut that kind of holds what they call that pivot rod in place, and that's what pulls that stopper up and down when you pull that handle on the faucet. So you pull that pivot rod out, take the nut off, pull the pivot rod out. That releases that stopper, and you can pull that right out of the top of that drain. And I'm here to tell you right now, you will be surprised. It will look like what you're pulling off of that, if you have long hair, all that, it'll be like a mouse. It'll be like the size of a mouse. It's pretty incredible what can get gunked up and stopped in there. But clean that stopper all off. You can try that hair snake again to go down there and pull any more out of there. But the next best thing to do, if you're really, really inclined, is to go underneath that sink again and take off that P-trap pipe, because then you can kind of see right down through. You can push anything through right out to the bottom, and you can clear out that P-trap. So you can clean the pipe, you can clean the inside and get rid of any buildup, rinse it out, and then reattach that pipe. It's really, if it's plastic PVC down there, it's two nuts, and that comes right off, and you really only hand tighten those nuts. So it's not, you don't need a lot of big tools and things like that to get this accomplished. There's not a whole lot needed to get through it. So then once you put everything together, what I do is I just run the hot water for several minutes and just let it flush everything out once it's all put back together. And then generally, if you keep up with that, that is what will happen. And just keep that drain clear, and it will help prevent from having clogs and things going on down the road if it starts pushing through and truly getting into the pipes. Now, a lot of people might recommend that you use boiling water, but I would watch that, because plastic PVC pipes are really meant to go about 140 degrees. So you could boil water, get it really hot. Once you're at or around that 140 degrees, just kind of, then you can pour it through and you're at that kind of maximum temperature. But definitely be weary of that and getting too hot of water down there. Be weary of too many chemicals too often. It's okay every now and then, but if it's happening a lot and you're using these chemicals twice a year, that can start to damage pipes and all of that. So, but hey, let's get to our middle hour break right here. We got one call on the line. If you could hold through that break real quick, we'll get to our break, and that way I'll make sure I got enough time to get everything with you and all that. It'll be a quick one, I promise. More to come right after this, and we'll take that call right after this. Hey, remember right here, home improvement, whatever you have going on, you can find me. We've got plenty of time today for you at 314-436-7900. And just like Mary found me, let's go to the phones and see what's going on. Are you there, Mary?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little chilly.
Yeah, yeah. So we all are.
I live in Mid-County, and my house is about 100 years old, and we have radiators. So my furnace people told me that my boiler just died. So I wanted your opinion, radiator heat versus forced air. Should we at this time consider, we have no ductwork in the house, we have window units for the air conditioning. What is your opinion, radiator heat versus forced air?
Well, so the forced air can definitely be good, and there are some like high powered units that makes it easier to run smaller ductwork throughout a home like yours. So there's units that are meant for getting ductwork around through a 100-year-old home. It's smaller ductwork. It's forced even more than a traditional what we put into a new traditionally built house, and that will help get the air around. One of the things, so two things with it that I would say is, one, it depends on what you like, because a lot of people like the boiler because they just like the way it runs and feels. And the second thing is to think about the home and how this home has been working over a lot of years. When you start changing and going to like a forced air unit, you might start experiencing the house drying up a little bit more. In the wintertime, you might see a little more fine hair cracking and things happening on plaster. Not to scare you or be like, oh gosh, this is like a horrible thing to do. It's a fine thing to do, but just understand that it's a changing condition of the home. So if you start using forced air and it's drier in the winter and you start running air conditioner and you've got higher humidity in the summer, it can change some things with the house, with how wood swells and changes and shrinks and just some different things like that. You might notice some things a few years down the road. I mean, I haven't lived in a house that old with a boiler system, so I never really got accompanied to how it works, how it feels. But I know people that have had it for years really like the boiler system. So it kind of almost becomes a personal preference. Plus, then it becomes an investment level thing, too, of what does it cost to switch to forced air? But forced air could help you a lot in the summer, because then if you had an air conditioning system with it, then you'll have your air conditioning that way. You won't need your window units anymore, and it might cool the whole house, and you might be more comfortable during the summer with the forced air.
Several of my neighbors, a lot of people in the hood, have forced air for air conditioning, and then the radiators for the heat.
Yes. Yep. And that's a fine way to do it, too. And that's, again, a lot of people just like. And I've seen with some really larger homes and stuff, too, where they'll even have kind of both for the heat, too, to where once it gets really, really cold, they can go to a forced air that'll help heat the house, too, if you get into just times in the winter when it's real super cold, then that can help out. So I've seen it like three different ways. So, but yeah, do you like, I mean, I'm, how long have you lived in your house? Do you like the boiler?
50 odd years.
Yeah. So you're super used to that. And you may want to do like a lot of people have done and consider forced air for the air conditioning and keep the boiler. That's work for you. There's, you know, no necessary reason to change it.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for your advice. I appreciate you.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I appreciate the call and everything and good question. And it's definitely kind of like we were just talking about, too, with asking the questions and getting, having some conversations and getting some answers of, because a lot of times with these type of decisions also come the whole investment level conversation. How much energy will it save me? And you got to consider all these different options of, if I spend more money going to a higher efficiency, it's supposed to save me money. But then again, if you're only considering maybe you're going to live for 3-4 more years in that particular home, and you kind of look at what it's going to save you, and you go, okay, wait a minute, it's going to take me, gosh, about 10 years or better to maybe recoup the cost of what I'm investing into this. And as these things get more expensive and more expensive, that recoup time comes longer and longer. Then we start making those decisions and go, well, I'm just going to go with the normal thing. I'll spend a little extra on my heating and cooling bills, but I'm only going to be doing that because I know what's down the road for me and when I'm changing and everything. So it's really that expense comes into play in that thought and conversation and in decision-making process pretty much every time. But there's so many factors to think about. And the one thing I should have probably warned Mary about, too, is if you're considering forced air with the air conditioner, then doing that this year and doing that sooner rather than later might save you a little bit of money because there's new air conditioners coming out next year and there's a new regulation with the new type of Freon that they're putting inside these air conditioners that are going to cost more and the units are going to cost more. So I have a lot of HVAC people advising, hurry up and do your air conditioners before the end of the year, before this goes into place, and before the increase on the units happens, because apparently air conditioner units themselves, come 2025, are going to be 10, 15, upwards of maybe 25% more expensive than they are right now today with the different Freon, with the units we have right now. And that'll be ready and available for a long time, so you don't have to worry about, well, if I buy one now and it's an older Freon, am I ever going to be able to work on it? Am I ever going to be able to? Yes, you will, because that will still be around. It takes years and years and years, and they won't just completely get rid of that, because a lot of people, think about it, have what they already have, those older ones. So it's going to, you pass a law like that and you change what's happening, and it could literally take 30 years for that change to be 100% in effect. So consider that air conditioning, Mary, a little sooner than later, possibly, or at least have that conversation with your heating cooling contractor on what do they think about that. It's just good to learn it and know it. So, hey, we're going to jump into our break here. We got a quick one, and we'll be right back. So remember, you can find me at 314-436-7900. I will be right here for you. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned. All right, we are back. Here we go. Got plenty of time for you after this segment. Got a whole nother hour, so do not hesitate to jump right in and give me a call. Let's see what's going on around your home. 314-436-7900 finds me right here today. And let's think about it for a minute. Let's program that number. Let's do a moment of silence to let everybody program that number right into your phones. Mark it KMOX. Have it in there. You could literally just all of a sudden, hey, Siri, call KMOX, and it'll get you right to me again. 314-436-7900 is the number that you want to put in there. And before Mary's conversation, we were kind of talking about unclogging the bathroom drains and keeping up with maintenance type like that to keep your plumbing pipes working well. And we have this conversation often, and I get the question often about chemicals, worried about putting chemicals down the drain. Like we did kind of mention, you want to watch how hot the water is. You also want to think about, with really hot water, what type of sink you have in your bathroom. If it's porcelain, if it's a cultured marble or an onyx material, a man-made type thing, pouring water that's 212 degrees could damage the surface, cause cracks, just like in the pipes. So it could actually damage that sink also. But the chemicals from the drain unclogging products, you do have to watch. And it's really a matter of, it, if you think about it, it's like everything. It's a matter of how much, how often is this reoccurring, and how much are you using it? Because if you do this every so often, it's really probably not going to cause a huge problem. But chemical drain cleaners, if you have metal pipes, so if you're in an older home and you have metal pipes, they can corrode metal pipes. using too much of it a lot. So the cast iron, the galvanized steel, anything like that can eventually, if you're getting a clog every 6 months and you're pouring Drano-type chemical unclogging chemicals down there, I would recommend doing the clean-out version and trying not to do that often, especially if you're like Mary, you've been in your house 50 years. Think about if you were doing that a couple times a year for that long. It could definitely cause, and it could cause some problems in plastic pipes as well, causing warping and cracking over a lot of time. It just kind of wears down that material. And we're talking about the heat, running the hot water, but not necessarily boiling water. Well, these chemicals can actually produce heat and soften the PVC, and that's kind of where it can work some damage on that PVC. And then, of course, you got to think, which we think a lot more and talk a lot more about today, is the environmental concerns. Chemical cleaners can be harmful to the environment. If they enter the water supply, it would really not be a good thing. And you also have to think about your septic systems of chemical, those drain cleaners really killing off the beneficial bacteria that work inside your septic system. So you really do got to watch it. But I think it's really just a matter of don't do it too often. Don't use it too much. And if you're having to do that, think about different ways or consider a professional actually coming in and running their uncloggers and their snakes, and they got high pressured power washers that run through there to push everything through, even sludge and everything. And that stuff won't risk the pipes nearly as much. Or think about, consider DIY solutions of using like baking soda and vinegar down the drain. That's can help and is definitely less harmful to the environment and the pipes and everything else. So just some things to consider when you're having these the drain clogging issues in your sinks. And it is very, very common to have that happen and to need to get through it. So it's definitely something that you want to pay attention to. Now, let's kind of get into a little bit here with things that we talked about last week. Maybe it'll drum up some thoughts or ideas. And I like to go back over some of this because, too, you can go back on to the Odyssey website and the app and all of that, and you can go in and you can listen to past episodes. And so if you hear something that you're curious about and you want to know, then you can kind of go back and check it out and see what all we spoke about, because we had some really great questions and some good conversations last week. One of the things we spoke quite a bit about was the pros and cons of different types of insulation. Of course, it's getting colder. We're all feeling that. And so we had some different conversations about insulation around the floor, the rim joists, the perimeter of the basement at that floor and in the attic. So we spoke with Junior and Jim and Tom about three different kind of area scenarios and what was happening and the good, better, best ways to do it. And even when you get to the best, there's some cons that you might have to think about and consider how your house is and how it works. And have you had termite issues or not? And will you be able to inspect for termites? So there's a lot more to think about than just the insulation. A lot more to consider in getting through that. So we also spoke, I had a really good conversation with Lisa about a four-year-old water heater that was knocking and why that happens and what can you do to help and does she need a new unit right away. And we kind of spoke about the benefits of a water softener helping prevent that from happening on the next new unit. But then John called in and made some comments, and we kind of spoke about his water heater being 27 years old, and we've got the last caller with a four-year-old water heater that's having knocking and sounds happening, and we're already talking about possibly needing to replace that water heater to have that go away. And the whole conversation on, well, they don't make it like they used to, and nowadays really could be a little bit up to the luck of the draw on the lasting value of some of these products that you're purchasing for your home. We've been around the block several times with how these things work and last, and what do they kind of say the life expectancy is. And typically on a water heater, you got about 8 to 12 years is what they're saying your expectancy is. If you do a tankless, you can get more towards that 20 years, 15, 20 years again, because it's not housing all that water. It's working very differently, so it can really have a lot more lasting value out of a tankless. But sometimes it's how often you use it, how hot do you keep it, how hard is your water. There's all these different circumstances that can play into. And then the brand, the quality and the brand, the usage, the maintenance. Do you drain and flush that water heater once a year, or do you not? There's all these different things that kind of work at that and play into how that will last for you. So, yes, a water heater could not last as long in one area of St. Louis than another area. So, hey, we're going to get into our final hour break, our news break here, but don't go anywhere. We'll have way more to come when we return. And again, 314-436-7900. All right, everybody, we are back. Hour two of the Home Improvement Show, and we've got a bigger audience. Let's welcome in 97.1. So you guys, same thing, same phone number. Get you right to me, 314-436-7900. Get you right here. Anything going on, any conversations you maybe want to have, maybe you've just had some weird things going on. I know we've had so much rain and water. The foundation waterproofing companies have got to be pretty much going out of their minds, probably scheduled well into January. I know they're getting filled up, backed up, and when these events happen, everybody starts to see the problems come out, and sometimes you know you have a slight issue, you just don't know how bad it is until it magnifies, and you get a big rainstorm like we had a couple weeks ago, and it brings everybody out of the woodwork, or the spots you saw, you've always had a little bit of water, all of a sudden you got a lot of water, and you're trying to figure out, okay, where's this coming from, how's this happening, and maybe it's time to do something with that. So any questions like that, you got any maintenance stuff, I'm right here for you. Again, 314-436-7900. And we were just talking about kind of the life expectancy of water heaters, and maintenance is a big part of keeping things and making them last longer for you, having a longer life expectancy of everything you own. If you think about your vehicle and then go to think about your home in the same kind of mannerism of that vehicle, everyone knows that when you have a car, what makes the car wear out is not keeping up with the maintenance and driving a lot of miles. So the usage, how many miles do you drive, kind of shortens the life expectancy of that vehicle, and then the maintenance can lengthen it. If you get your oil changed like recommended and keep things clean, and really you get a leak, get it fixed right away, rotating your tires makes your tires last longer. Your home is the same way with everything. Think of your oven and your stove and the life expectancy of that. If you keep it clean, if you maintain it well, and then think of usage. If you use an oven every single day and you're a baker, that oven is probably going to wear out quicker than someone that makes a dinner that involves the oven maybe once or twice a week. and maybe they eat out a lot, all that. So all of that comes into play with how that will last and how that will work out for you and everything. So keep all that in mind. Keep the maintenance up. Keep the thought up with all of that. And for now, we've got Donna on the line calling in. So let's go to Donna and see what is going on. Are you there?
I'm here. I'm calling about basement windows. I've got a house that's about 30 years old, and the basement windows are metal frame, and they were placed in the concrete foundation when the house was built.
Yes.
And in extreme cold, the metal frames and the windows get ice on the inside of the basement downstairs. Seems like the cold is transferred to the inside by the metal frame. And I'm wondering if a vinyl replacement window that would cover up the metal frame on the outside of the house would be enough to stop the icing on the inside. I'm thinking the best solution would be to remove the entire metal frame from the foundation, but I don't know that that's possible.
Well, so it is possible to remove that metal frame. And the one time that I recommend removing that metal frame, and this is something that you could consider too, is a lot of times when we replace those windows in basement concrete, a lot of people go to glass block windows. So when you do a glass block window, it's mortared in. It's kind of like brick. It's mortared in around. So it's a better system if you remove that metal frame and put that glass block window in and kind of mortar it into that concrete like it should be, especially if it's in a window well and it could possibly take on any water. So it's great to do that, but it's not easy to do because it is placed in that concrete.
I have no window wells.
Okay, it's all above ground?
Yes.
Yeah, so if you look at going to a vinyl replacement window like you're talking about, we do that basically the same way we would do it upstairs in the house is you put in that vinyl, you take out the metal frame, not the metal frame around the concrete, but just the glass with the metal frame that the glass is in. And when you do the vinyl, you can leave that metal around the concrete and basically insulate it from the inside around the window with some spray foam type insulation. That'll help seal off from the outside. Your vinyl will be better than the metal, and then the glass will be double insulated glass that'll keep the cold on the outside. Get a good glass with that window, and then just kind of cover the outside, wrap it and caulk it and everything over top of that metal, and then that will help with the temperature and that freezing and everything that's going on inside that basement if you do the vinyl.
As long as the vinyl replacement window would cover the 2-inch surround metal frame on the outside of the house, that should give me some protection from ice developing.
Yeah, typically what they do is the vinyl window doesn't actually cover all that metal, but then you put like a PVC trim or something like that around it, cover it up and caulk that to the concrete, and so that'll help with that.
Yeah, and then the metal would not be exposed to the extreme cold, ice, snow.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Thank
you
very
much. Yep, and that's a perfectly adequate way to do that with the vinyl replacement windows. It's how it's done pretty much every day. So you're very welcome.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Great question. And something that we do here at Mosby Building Arts all the time with our exterior employees, our crews, replacing doors, replacing windows, understanding a really good way to do that. And every situation is a little bit different from the next. Every house can be a little bit different, the way you face all the just differences and everything. So you got to kind of consider all of that when you do some of these projects. But that is a great, adequate way to replace those windows, and it will help a lot with the temperature inside that basement area and how that's insulated. It'll help with the level of humidity and everything inside that basement. So it is a great thing to do. So let's hopefully take some more calls here after the break. Let's jump into a break. But don't forget, again, just like Donna found me, you can find me at 314-436-7900. We're going to take this break, and it'll be a quick one. We'll be right back. Don't go nowhere. All right, everybody. We got plenty of time. We got plenty of home improvement for everybody. Don't forget, give me a call, 314-436-7900. Jumps you right in. Get you in the conversation. Any kind of maintenance, any kind of remodeling, maybe you're just needing some advice on best products to use, we got you covered right here. And speaking of having you covered, we got David on the line. Let's see how we can help with our friend David. How you doing, David?
Good, sir. How are you?
I'm doing very well.
Replacement basement windows.
Yeah.
St. Louis masonry and glass block systems. On the west side of Kings Highway across the street from Henry Plumbing Supply.
Yeah.
They will pre-grout and strap the windows for you. Obviously, they don't install them, but glass block windows for a basement, incredible insulating power and very good security.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Very good security.
And they insulate as well as those vinyl hopper windows we were just talking about.
Yeah, well, get rid of the metal frame. Forget about vinyl, in my opinion. Once you grout those in, they'll pre-make them for you, pre-strap them. Obviously, it has to be pre-measured. But,
yep.
You measure them, they measure them. You go and pick them up and have a contractor put them in. That's a permanent solution. They've got all kinds of, they Delphi, all kinds of patterns in the glass blocks. That's the way to go, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, and you can do, if you're worried about just some kind of airflow, if you like, they do make little vinyl hopper
exactly.
windows that go inside those glass blocks, so you can flip that open and actually get
PVC
some air.
Windows.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like 2x6. They've got actually got 4x4s. If you got a large glass block window, they make screened windows you can grout in. But that's the way to go. Forget about vinyl for replacing, in my opinion, again. Go with glass block. That's
yep.
permanent.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I appreciate it, David.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Hey, I appreciate the thought. And yes, I'm speaking about that glass block and cutting out that metal frame, that's exactly how we do it is when you cut out that metal frame, they put that glass block together before they bring it out, just like David was talking about, and then they mortar it into place to that concrete. So glass blocks of St. Louis will do that for you, and they will do the installation and everything, and they can cut out that metal frame. I've totally had them do that for me on projects, and I've done it where we were in a window well and we were concerned about water and water rising up and getting into it and putting drains in the window well, and all that's a great thing to do, sump pumps, whatever, but that glass block will work kind of like a brick wall and you know, block wall or whatever, and kind of hold that water back for quite some time. So hey, we got Jan on the line. Let's jump to Jan and see what is going on.
Hi, just a second.
Okay.
I wondered if you would please give kind of a list of what one should do for maintaining a house before winter comes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely a lot that can happen. So I have that on my list of things to go through, and it's really just a matter of finding a time in between phone calls and stuff like that to jump into that. But yeah, I can definitely do that for you, because it is a long list. It will be quite some things about inspecting and caulking and just things you could do to make things better throughout the winter and everything. So yeah, I will definitely try and get that to you. If I don't have time because of calls by the end of the show, I will get to that next week for sure. I'll put it at the top of my list.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Appreciate the call and the comment, and it's good to hear what people would like to hear about and everything. So we got, I think, Marilyn's on the line. So are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, perfect. What's happening? What's going on?
We built our house in 92, and we caulked pretty good around the house in the basement. Well, down by my laundry room, bees keep getting in. There were three wasps in the room last night when I went in, and my son came down and helped me kill them, but we can't figure out where the wasps could be coming in. We haven't had any problems with wasps, and last year we had wasps get in, and then once again they're starting to get in again this year. So we have wires come in from the basement. My electrical box is right there by my washer and dryer.
Okay.
My son thought maybe that's where they're getting in. But we got any ideas?
So there is, so at the top of that wall and that floor, kind of where that electrical comes in, everything, do you have like a fiberglass insulation that you can see running along kind of the rim board of that floor on the outside of that wall over top of the foundation?
Yeah, I think there's something out there that's supposed to protect that, because that man that put the electrical in did fix it pretty good. And we had no problems since 92 up until last year where they start getting in.
Yeah. So what I would say is there's a lot of opportunity where they can get in, and it's basically any penetration like you're talking about, that where that electrical wire comes in, the air conditioner line comes through the wall. Is the outside of your house, is it vinyl siding?
It's vinyl, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So they put, when they pack those lines with that kind of pipe dope kind of stuff they just pack around, it's almost like Play-Doh, that doesn't necessarily fill the hole through the wood. So if the wasps get behind the siding, then they can follow the hole with that wire inside. And there's also at the foundation level where the wood sits on the concrete, you could have some gaps there, or you can have other wires and things that penetrate in through that siding, in through the house, like the cable TV line. They drill a hole, and so they seal it to the vinyl siding, but they don't really seal it to the wood. So that could be another spot. So really what needs to happen is all that insulation that's against the outside of the house on top of the foundation, against that last floorboard that's got the vinyl siding right on the other side of it, you just need to pull all of that insulation down and then see, just inspect everything and fill and caulk, and the expansion foam that you spray in is a great way to keep them out, and you can spray that along the whole board against the foundation top. You can spray it around all those different wires, penetrations, where the dryer vent, if it goes through, that could be another spot. If there's a 4.5-inch hole and a 4-inch pipe going through it, they could be coming around that pipe and coming in. So it's finding every area like that and trying to fill it. And you might find like their little mud dauber nest or something in there, and then you really kind of, that'll pinpoint where they are too.
Okay. Well, we'll look. And I didn't think about the dryer vent area.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that. So that could be a place where we could look. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. You're very welcome. It's definitely somewhere above that foundation along that floorboard. And just a great inspection is going to find that and pinpoint that out. So let's get into our middle hour break here. We've got a lot going on, got a lot of great conversations. Maybe we'll get into some winter stuff when we return, so stay tuned. More to come. All right, here we go. We are back. Got lots of time for you here, so feel free to jump in on this conversation. Any thoughts, any questions, any maintenance, any tips, anything you might need that you need to know all around your home, I'm right here for you, 314-436-7900. And while we wait for the phones, let's help answer Jan's comment there with some preparing your home for winter, because there is a lot of things that you can do and check. And basically, the good walk around is the big thing. Checking for drafts on all of your seals, windows, doors. A good way to do that is to take a piece of paper, just a regular 8x10 piece of paper, and if you set that paper down and you close your door and you put that on the threshold, how easy is it to pull that piece of paper into the house? Does it feel like there's resistance? You could do it on the side of the door. You could do the same thing on your windows. Put it down there, shut your window. Is that paper very easy to get inside the house, or is it tough? And do you feel the pull? Then you know things are sealing pretty well. If it's super easy to do, then you know maybe there's something you need to look at replacing there. So inspecting around for key areas of insulation in your attic, around the top of your basement, air sealing, looking at areas like that is another great thing to do to keep the warmth in the home and to keep the cold towards the outside of the home. So, hey, we're going to pause that for just a minute. We've got Pam on the line, so let's jump to Pam and see what is happening. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here, and I'm interested in sort of the pluses and minuses of heat pumps. So we have a HVAC system that was installed in 2008, and I know it's close to the end of life, and some of the things I've been reading was heat pumps are, you know, a potential solution or part of the solution, I'll say, to new installs of heating and air.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so heat pumps, so they are definitely super energy efficient. They will definitely save some energy and energy cost in running them, so they are very good for that, for sure. They will definitely help out with those energy concerns and saving money. They transfer heat rather well, and they use less energy in creating that. So that's a really good thing, and you can have some good cost savings from that. They are environmentally friendly, so basically the reduced reliance on the fossil fuels, using less of that, is a good thing, basically, for the environment in its entirety. And the safety part of them, a good thing. No combustions means no risk of carbon monoxide leaks or exposure in your house, like we had heard about. I think it was Mary that had the boiler that died, that the carbon monoxide came in. And so you reduce the risk of that with heat pumps. So there's several reasons that they're great and they work really well. So I would say, too, some of the cons of a heat pump is it is going to cost a little more money up front, but it's going to save you money in the end. So that goes back to that whole conversation of how long does that take? How long are you going to live in your house? Are you really committed to staying there? And that makes it more reliable thing to do for you. So the biggest con really with them is that the efficiency in how they work drops greatly in extreme cold. So they start to not work as well the colder that it gets outside. So that can be kind of a downside to having it heat the house really well when it gets way below freezing, which in our area, that's only certain times, and that's short-lived times of the year, of the winter, when it happens, when it gets that far down. And then that they depend on electricity, so you do got to think about where you're at. Do you lose electricity? Are your power lines in the sky, on the poles, and how often do you lose electricity in the winter? That would be a concern in how that works. And probably one of the last things that I can think of off the top of my head is the noise level. They're a little louder, and they run more. We actually had in our last house we lived in, our neighbor behind us had a heat pump, and it drove my wife crazy. And she was like, "Do they run their air conditioner in the winter? Like, what is going on over there?" I'm like, "No, it's a heat pump. It's running from there year round, so you get that outside noise, and they're a little bit louder." And that's not a big deal. I mean, once she knew what it was and understood it, it kind of went away. But yeah, I would definitely consider that all those different options to see if a heat pump could be right for you, because they are good and they do work well and they do save money.
You do recommend installing them in our climate, in our area, basically. I mean, our winters obviously are getting warmer, you know, a lot less real deep cold. So they are a good option for our community.
Yeah, I think they are. And it's just good to have some backup, maybe some of those tall kind of space heaters that if you need to put a couple of those out during that week that we get when it is 12 degrees or it gets really, really super low, then maybe you just have a couple things of backup that you rely on just for that short amount of time. And I think, you know, you could do fine with them.
Okay. All right. I appreciate your information.
Yeah, absolutely. Not a problem at all. That great question. And it is something that I don't know I don't claim to be a scientist with the whole global warming and how things are happening. I kind of look back more at just what I've seen and what, boy, we sure does seem to, we get a lot less snow than it seems like we did 30 years ago or 40 years ago when I was a kid and we had these giant snows. It was pretty crazy, and it seems like we get a lot less of that. It seems like winter's getting colder, but for a shorter amount of time. So it's almost like it's colder than it used to be, but it only lasts like a week. Or it's just kind of my observations of what I've experienced and seen happening over the past 30, 40 years with our winters. It definitely seems to be different and definitely seems to have some changes to it. And that is also why when building room additions and building new homes, and that's why we change all the requirements of how we do it, because like having a heat pump is a good thing to save money, work, all that. Well, when you build a home, if you insulate the attic to an R49 insulation value instead of an R38, which is where the recommendation has gone over the past 10, 20 years in our area, if you build it with 2x6 walls and it's thicker and you've got more R value in that wall in a lot of areas, that's what they're requiring. All the exterior walls are 2x6. Get a better insulation value. Hold that temperature in and keep all that working. That heat pump's going to work a little better for you because it's going to hold that heat inside the house better for you, because the house is now air sealed better, it's insulated better, and it's functioning and working better scientifically in how the house should breathe and work. And so that all plays into it and helps with that as well. So definitely good things to do, and it's only going to get better as we build differently and better from here. So I think we got Tim on the line, but let's jump into our break. Tim, if you don't mind, it'll be a short, quick break, but then in the next segment, I'll have plenty of time to get to you and take some time and get some answers for you along with everybody else. So let's get into that. Stay tuned. Don't touch that dial, and we'll be right back with Tim. All right, guys, we're back as promised. Let's get right to Tim on the line and see what's going on. Thanks for holding through the break, Tim.
No problem, mate. Rich, I just had a comment about the guy with the heat pump. I worked in a trade for 34 years, and it's kind of funny because a lot of people didn't know this, but, I mean, you can install a heat pump with a gas furnace or electric furnace, but when it gets severely cold, all you need to do is flip it over to emergency heat. You just run your gas or your electric heat until
it's
got back up, and go that route, you know, so...
Having that backup when it gets that cold is, definitely a good idea.
So, anyway, that was my comment.
And you know, if you were there back the past 34 years, you probably remember the old commercial that was basically from Laclede Gas, that the heat pump, schmeat pump, like they tried to make it out to not be a great thing because it wasn't gas. And remember that with old Vern on TV?
Yeah,
and
Vern.
Trying to talk people out of heat pumps and saying they're not good, and they take like that situation that happens maybe 10% of the winter at best, and play it out. And that whole thing was kind of the gas company saying keep using gas is really what they were trying to push.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you can connect the heat pump up with gas too, but usually it's with electric furnace. But the other thing I was going to mention to you about the water heaters is I bought a house here in 87. I had to replace the water heater in 96, which I did it myself, and I put in a Richmond water heater.
Uh-huh.
And I talked to a plumber on new construction, and I said, why did the other one go out so early? He's like, what temperature do you have it on? I said, as hot as it'll go.
Yeah.
And he said, dude, when you get to medium, just set it one notch over medium. And that water, that Richmond I put in 96, is still in my house today and still works just fine.
Wow, yeah. That's awesome. But yeah, it's a usage thing too. Yeah, if you have it up all the way, it's just getting used more and more. Yeah. It'll go sooner.
That's my comments.
All right.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for the comments, Tim. Yeah, and that's a good thing, cuz the your HVAC contractors can consider and talk to you about a way to have that backup ready to run for that heat pump so that you can save a whole lot of money when you can, and then the little short time that you need the backup running, you run the backup. So, yeah, great thing to consider. And with winter coming here, it's getting colder and colder, that it is good to get prepared and be ready. And so let's get back to some tips here for Jan and for everybody that I appreciate her bringing up. Kind of the maintenance list, what should we be thinking about, and what should we be doing to get prepared for winter. And, of course, the biggest thing that's really number one on the list here is going outside and disconnecting all of your garden hoses off of your hose bibs. If you have the frost-free hose bibs, once you disconnect that garden hose, then you're good to just, you shouldn't have any problems, because the shutoff is actually really far inside the house, and that's what prevents it from freezing. But if that garden hose is connected to that hose bib, it will hold water inside the pipe between the hose and the shutoff, and that's where that pipe will expand, freeze, and crack, and it'll split open, and you won't know that that's happened till the first time you turn that water on from the outside. If you don't have the frost-free hose bibs, they do make those kind of foam covers that you can snap on right over top of that hose bib to try and help keep some of that temperature off of that. But going around the outside of the house and trimming tree branches that could fall during storms, if they're near the house, just cleaning everything up, storing patio furniture, covering any outdoor equipment up, looking around, inspecting your walkways, repairing any cracks, uneven conditions, thinking of just kind of considering what happens when ice gets on all of this. So getting to that concrete work before winter is a really, really good idea. Moving kind of back inside, looking for kind of energy improvements. If you reverse your ceiling fans and set them to spin clockwise at a low speed, you can keep them running all the time. It is really a great thing to do to keep that air moving, but it'll push that warm air back down, which is contrary to what most people think. They think, well, in the summer, let's have the air blow down on us because moving air feels good, but you got to have it running so high. So it's backwards from what you think. In the winter, push that warm air down. In the summer, pull the cool air around the room up towards the hot air and get it moving, and that'll keep the house actually cooler. So it might be kind of back from what you think. Of course, just like the conversation with the water heater, inspect that water heater. Basically, you want the temperature coming out of that water heater to be 120 degrees is really the setting. That's the max setting where you want to have it. And like Tim was just talking about, you do that and you can, it just uses less. So it doesn't heat up as often. It just makes that last longer for you, creates a longer life expectancy for it. But going around and checking all your safety devices, smoke detectors, carbon monoxide detectors, test the batteries, change the batteries, make sure they function. Make sure you have the system that they all go off if one goes off is a really, really great idea. So they did that for a reason, to where if they're far away and you may not hear them, you want the whole house going off all at once. But going into your fireplaces, chimneys, have them looked at, have them cleaned, have them inspected. If you use a wood-burning fireplace, for sure, stock up on your firewood, keep it clean, do all that, store it in a good dry place away from the house. You don't want it right up against the wall. And then another thing is kind of just think about what happens in the winter. Think about the storms, the power outages. Are you in an area that gets a lot of power outages? So just be prepared. Have an emergency kit that has your flashlights and your batteries and blankets and all that thing. Have some non-perishable food ready to go. Maybe have backup power. Consider a generator, or having a generator ready to go, or having one installed. They can do whole house generators that do a portion of the house, do all of the house. There's all sorts of ways you could do that. And then think about the snow coming in. Consider having all of your snow removal tools ready to go where you need them. Buy your ice melt now. Get your snow blowers ready. All that's to make sure that it's working, that it's going to be ready when you need it. Don't, you know, everybody running to buy the ice melt right before the storm, and all the places run out and you don't have it. So run out and get that now and have it ready to go before winter. Definitely going around and looking at roof and gutters. Inspect the roof, the shingles, kind of look at things. Make sure everything looks good. Make sure nothing looks out of place. And you absolutely want to make sure your gutters are clear of any leaves, debris. It'll help avoid ice damming. and possible damage to the roof or the inside of the house with that. So make sure those downspouts are working and buried in direct water away from the house, at least 10 feet from the house. So there's a lot of things you can go around and get ready and get prepared. So, but we are completely out of time here. Had a great time, had some great conversations and questions. Really appreciate it with everybody calling in. Glad we got the tips out there for Jan. So, hey, everybody, be good to each other, be good to your homes, and I will talk to everybody next week.